A lot happened in this episode, and it's 10 years on. So I did find that jarring, and I know other people on social media did. But
Yeah, I thought it was too much. I thought when the baby was born at the beginning, that would be her first child, and then immediately goes into, oh, this is our third.
Third one, yeah.
I got Handmaid's Tale vibes out of this, to be honest.
Brother did too.
It's interesting to see how House of the Dragon has sort of approached the topic of childbirth, because I don't think I've seen anything on television that is like it. I've read the Handmaid's Tale book. I've not read seen the show, so maybe that might cover it, but
I've seen the show. The birth, it hasn't shown as much as, the other stuff, but they have gone to that a little bit. But yeah, is that in Game of Thrones that have really portrayed a lot of, horrific, real, like potentially realistic stuff about, childbirth.
And yeah, we're introduced basically to a slew of young characters now who are going to be big players in House of the Dragons. So even though this is like a historical pace through, it does kind of feel like a lot of the stuff that we have seen up until this point is background, right? So you know how in Game of Thrones, like the whole precursor to it was Robert's Rebellion, which was an incredibly a complex battle with lots of moving parts, but they generally explain it through anecdotes throughout the first season, and I feel like a lot of that might have been a better way of dealing with the earlier stuff in Dance of the Dragons, because it I'm not entirely sure what they're trying to do, because it's very difficult to grow attack like to I suppose like latch on to characters as much on this, because they either die or they change and grow so much that it becomes very jarring. Do any of you guys feel the same?
Yeah, I think I hope that going forward that they slow down the pace a little bit, and based off of the preview for next week, it seems like that's gonna be what they're doing, and I think they're gonna be getting to that point in the story soon where all the action is gonna be happening, so they're gonna have to be forced to slow down.
I thought it was interesting that Harwin Strong seems to be such an important pivotal character to a point, although he died in this episode. We really like only saw glimpses of him before this. Before this episode, if you mentioned Harwin Strong to someone that might only have watched it through once or, casually watching it or anything like that, they wouldn't know who he was. And then suddenly this guy who, did he even have a speaking part up until this episode is I don't know, he seems like a very, he came out of nowhere, was a very important character, and then died.
He served as his purpose and role immediately, and then off by.
But I mean, it's and also okay, so we were talking about the of course the Strong family, what they were going to do, right? Were they playing both sides? Were they doing the best for the realm? Were they all singing from the same hymn sheet, or is it a house divided? Well, I think we know the answer to that. We know our little finger, don't we? We've got our little finger.
Yeah, Laris.
Laris.
Yep.
I really like Laris. I think
Okay.
he's
Course you would.
I'm a little interested by his motivations though, because usually with people in Game of Thrones, it's usually like dynasty is like a big driver for a lot of people, right? Like that's why they do all the like I think even Tywin Lannister says it quite early on in maybe season one, that you know, like, legacy is the thing that lives on while you die. And, like, everyone seems motivated for the most part by, if not their legacy, like their family, their tribe, their people, their, you know, in the case of Lord Varys, it was like the people, you know, for the great, but like everyone seems for the most part to be serving like a stronger purpose. Like, not like a bigger, like a purpose bigger than themselves. Right. Except now Laris Strong doesn't. And I don't know what he's trying to do. Is he? Because he's like, he's already doing all right, right? Like he's not like, what does he want?
Well, I guess he wanted to be the Lord of Harrenhal, for one thing.
Does he? So he?
Well, oh, yeah, he killed his father and his brother, you know, and now he's using that for to show, I guess, allegiance to Alicent. In her faction.
Mm-hmm. And he becomes, in Alicent's council, he becomes, what's it called? Lord of Master of Whispers, which makes a lot of sense. Here's the thing, like, a few people have insinuated, right? And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this, that he might be like a green seer, or that he can walk into the rats, because you see rats all like, yeah. And I didn't think much of this. I thought this is typical like Game of Thrones, you know, wacky theory territory, right? Except like there was a scene in this particular episode where there's like a voiceover. And then you see rats scurrying around the king's palace. And you just can't help but think that the two are linked there.
Yeah.
Or at least I certainly drew my attention. How do you feel about Kristen Cole, right? He's still hung about.
Yeah, he's
even more unhinged. Or just that as much more, because he gets into that battle with the... when they're training the kids, right?
Yeah. Like I Kristen Cole's a strange one, because I get both incel vibes from him and insecure dad at a sports game vibes from him at the same time. Like there's something like he's just, I don't know, like very like emotionally stunted. So I don't know. I think but this is the real, like, I think we're seeing the real Kristen Cole, to be honest. Like you know, his transition to Alicent's council. I think he is unhinged. I was expecting him to be a bit more like, I don't know, grizzled, like a little bit more rough around the edges. But he just seems like, yeah, I don't know, like weird sort of emotionally stunted incel kind of guy who...
total incel you vibes.
We've also got Daemon across the Narrow Sea in Braavos. No, not in Braavos. Is it Braavos? Lys.
Yeah. No, was in Pentos.
Pentos. I got them actually. Yeah. Yeah. He seemed to be doing all right in Pentos.
I mean, I would consider that offer too if I were Daemon and get away from everything going on in Westeros. That was probably the most interesting part of the episode for me, just all the stuff with him and Lena. This is another thing I think we lost in the time skip, was like sort of developing what happened with them, because it's like, oh, okay, they're married, they have children, and now she's dead. So that's something I would have liked a little bit more of.
Yeah.
Because I like exploring Essos a bit, especially during this time period. I want to see what's going on, what that's all about.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It feels, the pacing feels like not Game of Thrones in that regard, right? Because it's, yeah, like we didn't.
Yeah, the pacing is nothing like Game of Thrones. Mm. It's totally, this is a different beast in terms of that.
It's almost like an anthology where each episode has a theme or an angle that it's trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
It could very well be the case that that it's a little bit like The Witcher, where season one was like an anthology of different tales over quite a large period of time to world build a little bit. And then with season two of The Witcher, it kind of focused on a more linear, direct plot that was more condensed in terms of time by the looks of it. And whereas I don't know if that necessarily worked in The Witcher, I think this might be what they're trying to go for here, maybe. The season one is going to be like almost like a history, like a prequel. And then season two is going to be like the serious stuff, the bit where now we've got all the established characters, their motivations, their history, their backstories. We're connected to them. We know what they're doing. And then there might be the more sustained Dance of the Dragons itself, because we haven't actually hit the Dance of the Dragons. We've hit we're still very much in the precursor to it, really.
Yeah, and it's when you hit that time jump like that, that does work against like knowing the characters, because you miss possible stuff that happened during that time jump.
Well, absolutely, you know? Yep. And we got characters that have already sort of developed personalities in terms of the children that. Yeah, it does feel a little bit like missed, I guess. But it could be it could level out. Like it could just be that we're being fed, and this is like, also to be fair, this is like the mid-season like, I don't say like the mid-season lull or anything like that, but like this is the bit where they get the calm before the storm, before the final few episodes, where maybe they'll be building up to a battle, maybe they'll, you know, or they'll be building up to their big event.
It's like the eye of a hurricane.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Although admittedly I really did like this episode. Like I'm talking it down, but like
it was a very character like focused episode. There weren't like a lot of huge like events. It was very much focused on people making decisions and
I really like the actor that played Rhaenyra's husband. I forget his name now. Just trying to find the cast. Oh, actually, I have noticed, just looking down the cast list here, the number of characters is really sort of thrown out now. Like, it started out the first couple of episodes, it felt like there was only a handful of characters. Now it's sprawled out quite a lot.
Sir Laenor Velaryon is played by John McMillan.
Yeah. And I kind of like the introduction to his character, or not the introduction, but like the introduction to like him in his role as the husband, him in his role as like a main player of the game, because until now he's been in the background, and he's one where the actors have switched up as well.
Yeah.
Because he went from like, how old was he in episode one? Like, he was like, I don't know, 11 or something?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
So, and of course they end at Dragonstone. They end Rhaenyra and the rest of the Valyrians. And I think I even see in the episode 7 preview that we see maybe, is it Daemon at Dragonstone as well? So is this where we're starting to see the Black Council come together?
Yeah. Well, they better get the Blacks better get their stuff together, because it seems like the Greens are holding a lot of power right now.
Mm. So who at the moment, like who is on the Green side? We've got Alicent and Otto Hightower, of course. Then we've got, of course, Larys, who I don't, you know, like, he seems to be, like, he's someone that's getting things done, right? Like, I wouldn't want to be on his bad side, because he certainly seems quite ruthless and cunning. And then we've got Kristen Cole. And then on the other side, we've got like Rhaenyra, Daemon, the Valyrian, House Valyrian, and all of those folks, I think, yeah. So I don't know. Like, it seems, but like Rhaenyra's like, would you say she's fled to Dragonstone? I think that was quite, quite like overtly spoken, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's a lot of Valyrians and Targaryens on this cast list.
And a lot of them are the same characters. But in a lot of them, some of them are different characters, but they have the same name.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. I don't know where this show's, this season is going to end in the story, but eventually there's going to be two Aegons, like, I think around the same age or similar age, two young boys named Aegon Targaryen. So it's not going to get confusing at all, with especially with all the casting changes.
Yeah. It's, so, yeah. I'm interested. I reckon the... so Laenor Valerian's... partner on the side. They seem to be alluding to the fact that he might be someone influential in the story. Because I
think even, so.
Well, Rhaenyra said bring him along, but also when they did the shot where they were all walking up the Dragonstone steps, like he was in that shot, like he was in that sort of like posing shot, quite sort of towards the front of the party. Which I thought was quite interesting. I'm just gonna try and dig it up here. It was like he was right there, right behind Rhaenyra. So I think I don't know. Yeah, he might be. I don't know what his name is. I think he did mention it. Was it a Sir? Sir Carl Corey. Ah, Sir Carl Corey. Carl with the Q, of course. He's actually, he's listed. So, or Sir Eric Cagal. There's a few. Crikey! Oh, that's a long cast list. So, how did you find the jump with the different casting of Rhaenyra and Alicent?
I think I bought Alicent a little bit quicker than I did Rhaenyra, but I think by the end of the episode I was starting to buy them both as their characters. It's gonna take some getting used to, but I think they are both good. I do wonder how they did cast and like which way around they did who first.
Yeah. Or did they have to audition in pairs? I have no idea how casting works.
I don't know either. I'm not sure.
Honestly, Alicent was a complete winner for me. Like I was not even sure that the actor was the same. Like I literally wouldn't, like, basically if I wasn't expecting it coming, I might not even have noticed. Rhaenyra is a little bit different, but at the same time makes sense. Because there's more to it than just how they look. It's also like the voice, you know, like Rhaenyra's voice sounds older now.
Mm-hmm. It does.
So, yeah, I think it does kind of work. But like, yeah, like with you, Max, it was like towards the end, I was fully adjusted to it, which kind of makes sense to me. I think the time jumps kind of maybe help with that, actually, you know, where you don't expect the story to have that degree of continuity, that direct continuity, that link, that such a smooth linkage. But I definitely think it's going to be... it definitely looks like it's going to sort of slow down a little bit now, at least.
Yeah,
I say so. Just we'll probably see, I guess, Rhaenyra's kids with quote-unquote Laenor grow up a little bit, and then that's when the bulk of the action is going to happen.
It turns out that Lionel Strong died a hero, died doing his bit for the realm. I was going to wonder if
he's the best character in the show. He's rest in peace. He'll be like, I think, one of the fan favorite. You know, he was only doing the right thing.
He's Ned.
Yes, he's the Ned Stark. He's the Ned Stark of this show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and he died a Ned Stark's death, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
Although at least, he didn't quite die in Ned Stark's death. Like he didn't get slandered or anything like that. Well, but he did kind of get disgraced by his family, I guess. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That doesn't seem too.
But
bad,
it's kind of like, yeah, he was in other parallels to, you know, season one of Game of Thrones. Is that this has to do with Royal Bastards as well. You know, he discovers that the heirs to the Iron Throne are bastards, in which case they're his son. But he's like, this brings shame and wants to leave. Unlike with Tywin, who took advantage of it in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. That is, I didn't think of that parallel before. In fact, I think that, I mean, there were parallels aplenty in this particular episode. You had two fires that killed characters. You had two pregnancies. Yeah. What else do you have? You had, of course, we've got our Ned Stark's death. We've got our Larys and Littlefinger as well. Mm-hmm. And also quite interesting how. What is quite interesting as well, actually, going back and linking him into Littlefinger a little bit more, is that Larys has the little bee. He has like the little bee brooch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a cane too that had like a little
bee brooch on it. Yeah.
The bee brooch on it too.
That bothered me a little bit. It's like, you're really gonna give. You know, these guys, something that could potentially tie this back to you.
Yeah, like, right? Like,
like, that's a little dumb.
You're gonna give a symbol, put a symbol out there to get recognized.
Well, I mean, I don't, like, that's interesting, because maybe there might, maybe that might be a thing. Maybe it might be that these tongueless assassins might sort of make a name for themselves.
I'm looking,
you know, history. Like maybe they might be part of a assassin's guild or something.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this character guide. It's got like the tree on it with all the characters and how they're connected.
Oh yeah,
but,
HBO/
what was it? What was it about like Lena Valerian that she didn't? She didn't like what Damon was doing, basically. She thought he was settling, and he changed, I think.
Damon in Pentos.
Yeah, in Pentos, yeah, by making that decision. I'm just trying to get under the motivation of why she killed herself. Because it was such speaking of, like, you know, they had the beginning of the series, we had the dragon that breathed fire on the dead body, and now we have a dragon that breathed fire on a live person, willingly and ordered, which is different than a funeral.
Well, the birth was probably going to kill her, so I think in reality, I think it was more symbolic than anything else. Is that she kind of went out on her own terms. I think what they were trying to, I think the parallel that they were trying to draw here was like a mirror opposite to the first episode with Emma and Viserys and the childbirth there, because Daemon, for example, asked. Will she survive? And he asked, would she survive a C-section? And he was...
But do you think Damon really didn't get, like, the determination to make a choice regarding her? Did he even, like, want the baby? Did they know the baby was going to die, or did they think there was a chance the kid would live? Because I feel like he didn't really get that choice.
I think, didn't he say that the kid, the child is like, I think that they're basically both seemed to me like they were both likely to die. But yeah, so Elaine, is it Lana Valerian, the woman he got married to? So
yeah. Lana
Valerian.
Yeah.
L-E-N-A. Yes. I think what the sort of the scene there was supposed to symbolize is that she had more agency than Emma or Emma Arendt, the queen wife to Viserys.
Yeah, Viserys, yeah.
And I think that it kind of paints Daemon as like in some ways, like a nicer guy than Viserys, or at least a more thoughtful guy.
Because he gave her the agency to make her own.
Well, he at least, at the very least, he inquired as to whether or not she'd survive a C-section.
Right.
And there's like, I suppose the stakes are not as high with him. Like, it doesn't necessarily matter what gender his children are, right? Whether he has a son or a daughter, because they'll be Targaryens nevertheless, but also they're not in line for the throne, so it doesn't really matter. So there's a lot more sincerity in Daemon's relationship here. And they're even arguing for what they want as people, not what their duty to the realm is or any kind of strategy or anything like that. They're literally like planning a life for themselves and the family, you know, how their family should be. They're like basically the ones not scheming, really, which is kind of interesting there, and also a little bit more like tragic in that regard. Yeah. I have always imagined that Dragonfire is like mega hot. I've always thought like
it's probably like, a more like, I mean, fire is probably it's a bad way to go, but bleeding out's probably worse.
Well, I think I think the dragon throwing yourself into Dragonfire, I think similar to there were a couple of executions by Dragonfire in Game of Thrones. They all seemed really quick. I suspect that the flame is so hot that if a fire breathing dragon takes you out with fire, I think you're not in much pain. I think it's over and done within like a second or something. Like you're just
boom. So it's probably not the worst way to go. But
yeah, it's not like other fire. Like it is. It's just it's fast fire. Yeah, I think you're dead in less than a second. Whereas in like a beheading or something like that.
Or fire at the stake when they tie you to a stake.
No, not like that. That was slow. That's
yeah, that's it. That's bad. That's the slow version.
That's the slow burn. Literally. This character guide is really useful, actually. I'm just like,
yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I was looking at it for a picture, like understanding like the kids, and because now there's both three kids in both sets.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Alicent and Viserys. You got Aegon, Helena, and Aemond. And then for Rhaenyra and Laenor, you've got Jacerys, Lucerys, and Joffrey, which Laenor got to immediately name, I guess.
That wasn't much cooperative
stuff going on there.
Yeah, that was the name of his boyfriend that Kristen killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of interesting that he suddenly went there without consulting Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the book, I remember Laenor wanted to name their first child Joffrey, but it was they compromised and named the third child Joffrey. So.
Oh, okay. So in the books, they seem to have discussed it a little bit more.
They did discuss it a little bit, yeah, that they wanted the first two children to have Valyrian names.
Mm.
So then their first, the Rhaenyra's oldest, I think, is Jacaerys, and then the second is Lysarys.
Mm.
If you go down the bottom, Chris, there's a little there's a little like arrows on either side for other key players, and the Kingsguard and the small council too, which I didn't see until just now. But there's a lot of other key players that are involved that aren't part of the hierarchy up top.
Oh yeah, you got little arrows. You can click on the little arrows.
Yeah, and you've got the small council, Mellos, Jasper, Lyman, and Tywin Lannister.
And other key players, including Alan, Alan Caswell. He was the guy at the beginning who was like, if you need anything, if you need anything. Yeah. Kragas Draha, the crab feeder. Gerald Royce, Jason Lannister. Joffrey Lonmouth, deceased. Maester Orwell. Now, we saw him at the... Did we see him at the council meeting? The very last council meeting?
I think so.
Yeah. So he's not Grand Maester. I thought he might have been a new Grand Maester, but he's just... It just says... Unless... Yeah. Maybe he's filling in for Grand Maester Melos or something. Also, it says it, other key players. Carl Corey. So he's... And who's Talia again? I forget Talia. Oh, you can click on the picture and it gives you...
Yeah, it gives you like a... Oh, okay. Carl is the lover of King Consort, Serlena Valerian.
Ah. Interesting. Okay. Oh, this is kind of cool. All right. Oh my God, it gives you a map as well.
Does it really?
All right, I'm going to put a link to this in the description / show notes and everything. Because this is an awesome map. Oh, this is great.
What? How do you get to it?
There's like an equal sign in the top left-hand corner.
Click on that and click on the map.
And you've got everything. You've got This is gonna like get you like right up to speed with all the stuff that.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
That is a nice looking map.
Props to the person.
Where is it? Is it that link?
I posted in the chat. Yeah, that's the link to the hierarchy. And then if you click the equal sign top left, you can go to the.
Okay.
To the map.
And it's basically everywhere they've been, I think. You've got Runestone, Harrenhal, Dragonstone, Driftmark. Driftmark and Dragonstone are right next to each other. That's kind of cool.
You got Valyria, which is way, way to the south.
Stepstones.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, you got Valyria right there. What else we got? Giskar, Old Valyria.
Oh, somebody had to make this.
Cool. Slaver's Bay. Yeah, that's a really well done map.
Cool.
Okay, yes.
More context.
They needed to. Oh, man, this is good. This is fun. Cool. They got the Dragon Index character guide map. Like, I think the character guide is like, going to be particularly useful as well. That's that, because I'm terrible with the names.
Oh, they've got little shadows of dragons flying too. That's yeah. fun.
So we only have the one strong remaining now.
Yeah.
I wonder, do you think, one of the things, okay, this is a weird thing to sort of like ponder over, but I was wondering, like, is Lionel Strong's actor, is he actually bald? I'll have to look this up. Is that his natural hair, or did they make him bald for the show? I'm gonna look this up now.
I mean, it's possible. They like put like a cap over the person, they can make them bald. It takes a little bit of makeup and effort to do, but it's possible.
They probably maybe they might even shave him proper. Let's see. Gavin Spooks, he's the actor. What do we got? Oh yeah, no, he's kind of got quite a receding hairline. So I would say yeah, he's probably closer to yeah, what you're seeing in the previous episodes was almost certainly a wig.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Cool.
Nice. So, how did you guys rate the episode overall, though? Like, comparing it to the other ones in the series so far?
It was more towards the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, honestly, it's going to take a little time to get adjusted.
I feel like the episodes where they set stuff up aren't as exciting, obviously, as like the episodes where stuff actually happens, you know?
Yeah. I think in all honesty, one of the things about this episode that I think it's like well made, but I think in a lot of cases it's very sad. There's a lot of sadness in this episode. And that might make for like a like I don't know, like it doesn't, you know, you've got a lot of like the you can see the seeds of conflict even amongst the children. You can see the tragedy of like people aren't happy, and this is a very unhappy episode. People are very unhappy about it. You've got Rhaenyra, who gave birth under horrendous circumstances at the beginning. Then you've got Lena, who died in childbirth effectively at the end. You've got the
The house
standout
fire.
thing.
A lot of fire killing people in this episode.
Laris, I
And
think.
humans using fire to kill people. You have someone using fire to kill someone else, and you have someone ordering a dragon to use its fire to kill themselves. Like that's pretty sad. That's pretty bad.
Although, but the thing that does redeem a lot of this episode for me is Laris's character. I think he's going to be interesting to. I hope he's going to be interesting to follow. There've been a good number of times in Game of Thrones history where, like, a character opens in a really intriguing way, but then just ends up being quite mundane and not as bright as they sort of insinuated. But the thing about Laris that I think is kind of interesting is that he is both seemingly smart and well informed and ruthless.
Right, so
But
you're hoping that it's not a mundane villain situation, right?
yeah, ruthless isn't necessarily the right word, because like Tywin Lannister was ruthless, but he was also measured. I think Laris is
Right.
like not necess I think he's like smart, but might also possibly overplay his hand. Like he's not. He'll do more drastic things, I think, than like a more calculated person. I think he's a bit more audacious in his ways, possibly. A bit more, yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah, like it's yeah, like he'll do more extreme things to get his to you know, achieve his goals, I think.
I was gonna say Viserys, like he looked like he was doing a little bit better health-wise
Do you
than the
think
last
so?
time we saw him. I don't know, maybe not, but maybe they just didn't show as much. And like in the last episode, was he like coughing up blood at the wedding ceremony? And now he's like. And he like fainted, right? Or did he like fall over? And now he was like, he seemed like he was doing a little bit better. And it's been like 10 years later. Mean, maybe.
Yeah, I think there was less coughing, but he was definitely old. Oh, like
Yeah.
older, like he
Well,
looked.
his health wasn't as much of a. I mean, not being this as much the center of the episode was part of it too. Like you didn't get to see as much of his health situations this episode around as last time. But
I am wait like I said, I'm waiting for him to die. Like I thought he'd be dead by now.
I know, I thought he was gonna die this episode too, but I guess not.
Is
I guess he's gonna linger for
Yeah.
a little while longer.
I think I don't know. I think he could die next episode. Or maybe him dying actually might be the final scene of the episode 10. It might be the thing that the show ends on. Like it might be, I don't know. That's not a Game of Thrones type of thing, though, is it? Oh, well, actually, saying that, it could be a Jon Snow. Like they did it with Jon Snow.
Yeah. They also have a dragon index too, which I'm going to take a look at some point.
The thing I find it interestingly enough, the dragons in Game of Thrones have not, they've never like interested me too much. I've always liked the direwolves better, but it's a very, this is a very fancy website.
HBO.com.
Yeah, it's quite. So in terms of dragons, we've got Beleriand, Caraxes, Dreamfire, Meleys, Moondancer, Sea Smoke, Sunfire, Syrax, Vermax, Vhagar. And the only ones we haven't seen are Dreamfire, Sunfire, and Moondancer.
Yeah, it'll happen, I guess. At some point, we'll get there.
And Beleriand, of course, is dead. We just see Beleriand, the Black Dread's skull in
Yeah,
that room.
with the candles and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I don't know. This is a tricky episode, because like I think like Lara Strong has definitely like intrigued me, and I'm interested to see where he goes. So that's definitely a big win on this episode. But I think the rest of it, I think it was like generally quite well made and thoughtful, but also really somber and sad and tragic. And you know, you don't always feel great after what you know watching that. I guess.
No. What did you think of the pig dragon? He was trying to go down. Was he trying to go down into the dragon pit?
Yeah.
To like get his own dragon, and then he like was like, "No, that's not a good idea."
Yeah, I think so. I think he does get a dragon, but he is Daemon One Eye, so
yeah.
I wonder why on earth he would be called Daemon One Eye in this. but I think he does. I think he does end up riding a dragon. Apparently, I'm told it's a bigger deal for or something like that.
It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so that'd be kind of interesting.
I did think I thought it was cool to see in this episode how the young boys all interacted, Allison's kids and Rhaenyra's kids. Mm-hmm. That the Aegon doesn't really. Like it's not like Allison's kids versus Rhaenyra's kids so much, but like Aegon is like more picking on his younger brother and using his nephews to fuck with him.
Mm-hmm. One thing I didn't know is the parents,
his mother that's telling him is like they're your enemy. You need to prepare for war. They want you. They're gonna want you dead. Blah blah blah. Yeah. It's the parents that are pushing them into this.
Yeah, because they have the long-term view, and they're kind of trying to get them to make decisions based on things that might happen more.
Yeah, and also, of course, Alicent was the one that was pushed into it by her father.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's
like cycle. Mother, like father.
Yep, cycle.
Yep.
Although, one thing I did notice in the wanking out of the window scene...
Yeah.
Alicent said something like, you can tear your brother around at home as much as you want, but not in front of the others, which I thought was maybe a bit telling. Like, just be like, yeah, you know, you're going to be king, or hopefully going to be king, so, you know, we'll permit bullying, but just, you know... keep it hidden or something. Like, I don't know, I feel that sort of was intended to reveal a brutal part of her personality.
Is that like the image manipulation thing, like, oh, you can like do all this stuff here, but when you're among people, you know, play the image game, don't reveal everything, basically.
Effectively, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, to show a united front to the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there. Right, any final thoughts?
No. All good.
Cool. All right, I'll wrap us up then. Thank you all, folks at home, for watching. It's been a joy as always, and we will see you with next week's episode next week. Toodaloo.
Toodaloo.